I've got a on the phone right now, a true musical legend. Rock and roll and blues as we know it today would not be the same without this man. And I'll tell you something, and people that don't understand this, long before Tina Turner, there was Ike Turner, a true musical genius and innovator. And he's on the phone with us right now. Hi, Ike. Hello, Ike.
Hey.
There you are. There you are. Thanks.
You scared me to think that.
Thanks
how
for
you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, man.
Before we get started with the interview and talking about, the history that you have created in music, I was reading an article about you in the Tribune. It rehashed, all your life story, but it said something that you haven't even had a cigarette in a long time.
No, I haven't smoked since 1983, I think. It's been 4 or 5 years, something.
Your wife dragged you down to one of these stop smoking places and said,
"You're going."
Yeah,
it was a seminar. It was a seminar. I didn't believe that they could stop me from smoking. I've been smoking 50 years, and they're going to stop me from smoking in 2.5 hours, but it worked.
What brand did you smoke?
Marlboros.
Yeah.
But, man, that's the, wow, if I'd have known then, if I'd have known when I was younger like I know now, I never would have started.
So how'd they get you to quit?
Yeah, what
no,
was
man,
the...
they told me how to reprogram my subconscious mind.
And it worked?
Yes, it worked. I haven't had a cigarette since. I left that seminar.
Wow. That's incredible.
And I did not believe it was going to work because their advertisement was that they would stop, they guaranteed to stop you from smoking in 2.5 hours, or they would double your money back, $39.99. And so I was going to make $39,
yeah,
you know.
It's not a bad bet.
Yeah, and anyway, they won. I haven't smoked since.
You know, and reading that article, it sounds like you found yourself one hell of a woman because she keeps you in check.
Yes, my wife. Yes, I have a wonderful wife.
You are marching one hell of a comeback. Do I know there's a book in the works here?
Yeah, it'd be out in July.
And I guess the foreword of the book, from what I read, Little Richard had nothing but good things to say about you.
Yeah. Rich is a cool guy, man. I've known him for a long time, but, I've never been close with him like I was raised partly with BB. But Richard, man, he's a real good guy, man. He's really spiritual, He go off on funny things, but he's good.
The thing is with Little Richard, now, I've seen him go through various phases. When he came out in the 50s with the hits that he was coming out with, then he just said, no, I'm going to become a preacher. I won't even sing that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Then he comes back and he'll sing it for a while. Then he says, no, I'm not going to do it anymore. And he kind of vacillates back and forth to whether he wants to keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He's a confused kid.
Tell me.
But that's my boy, though. I love him.
Tell me about you, because reading the stuff on you and knowing some stuff on you, I mean, absolutely incredible. Take us back to 1951. Were you, in fact, a disc jockey at one point in time?
Oh, I was a disc jockey. Oh, way before that. I was a disc jockey, I was 9 or 10 years old in Clarksdale, Mississippi. At WROX radio station.
Yeah.
And you were able to overcome that and become something.
Man, I didn't know what I was doing, but I guess that's, country is my favorite music.
No kidding.
Yeah, nobody know that. But, anything I write, like A Fool in Love on Tina, or anything I write or something, man, any song I write, if you listen to it before I put the music to it, it's really country. And when I add the music to it, then it changes over to R&B or rock and roll or whatever.
Now, people will debate this for the next 100 years, but insiders, record people, music people, and all that will tell you Rocket 88, the first rock and roll song.
Yeah, you know something strange about that, though. It's like they say that they put me in the Hall of Fame in Cleveland for doing that. But but they always say it was said that you did the first rock and roll record. I don't know if I did or if I didn't, because nobody's ever said positively except that particular thing in the Hall of Fame where they put me in there and they said I did.
Yeah.
But it's always said in print on interviews. It was said. I would like to know who else did they say did it.
from what I'm reading, is that Sam Phillips went and sold that song to Bill Haley in the Comets. Is that true?
I have no idea.
Because I'm reading this. This is off the Sun's studio pages and talking about the early days. Said and tell me what is true and what's not true as I read this back to you.
Okay.
It says, Clarksdale, Mississippi, WROX DJ Ike Turner and his band teamed up with singer Jackie Brenston auditioning for Sam Phillips on March 5th, 1951, and ushered in a new era of American music. Rocket 88. And this is Sam Phillips talking here. He says Phillips and many other leading musicians called it the first rock and roll record. And they said it was cutting edge and breakthrough for its day, and that it was sold off to Bill Haley in the Comets.
No, I don't think so. When we came up there, B.B. King, he made the appointment for us to go there to record.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was recording for Sam. And we went up on a Wednesday, whatever, you said March 5th. We went there, and we cut that record, but he sold that record to Chess Record Company.
Mm-hmm. And, well, who's
on? I don't know who Bill Haley is.
Bill Haley and his Comets? Rock Around the Clock?
No, I don't, but maybe he did, I don't know. But, we made a lot of money off that record. We made $20 a piece.
Oh, wow. And that's another thing that the Tribune was talking about. You were one of the lucky people in the music business because so many of the black artists coming up at that time really had their royalties taken from them.
Yeah, and they didn't take nothing, man. I will clarify that. What they did, they never offered to pay you anything. Like I signed up with a Federal Record Company back, James carried me there in Cleveland. I think is it Cleveland, Ohio, or Cincinnati, Ohio, where King Record Company was.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's name was Sid Nathan. He gave me a fourth of a cent royalty.
That's junk.
So they didn't take it. They never told you they were going to give it to you.
Tell me about also when you and Tina were performing. They made some kind of reference that back in the 60s, and elaborate this on this a little bit more for me, but you guys were the only band in town where the quote-unquote mafia didn't have their hands in your pockets.
Yeah.
Tell me about
only
that.
Only because they thought that I was already with the mafia. Yeah, because they, in those days, man, you couldn't play Las Vegas, man, unless the mafia put you in there. You know, you had to be with one of these big agencies or whatever.
Yeah.
And we played all over the world, man. I never had a booking agency.
And the crooked noses never approached you and said, hey, cough up?
No, man. I was always gambling with them, doing everything with them. I started with Marshenka there in St. Louis.
Wow.
Yeah, now I guess one, you got a lot of different mafias. I guess one thought I was with the other one.
A different family.
Yeah.
And you didn't do anything to dissuade him, huh?
No, I didn't do it. Well, no, I wasn't even aware of it, man. I was just doing what I do.
Yeah. Tell me about, because you worked with a couple of real blues heavyweight legends, Howlin' Wolf and Sonny Boy Williamson, Rice
Miller.
Yeah,
man. Sonny Boy Williams. Excuse me, was the first guy that I've ever, he and Pine Top Perkins and Peck, all these guys from Helena, Arkansas, they were broadcasting from Helena, Arkansas on King Biscuit Time, I think is the name of it. And that's the first band I ever heard in my life. You know what I'm talking about, like playing what the jukebox play.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonny Boy was the singer, and Pine Top was the piano player. Because Pine Top is the first guy I've ever seen play piano in my life. In other words, in church, you know, I was a kid going to church, but I never even noticed the piano. You know, you were just doing what you was taught to do. And when I saw Pine Top play Boogie Woogie on the piano, man, it flipped my whole life. And, you know, incidentally, I'm going to be with Pine Top in Long Beach, California. He's 86 years old now.
And still performing?
Yes. I was with him a few months ago. I went to Chicago to do it. I just wanted this for my own personal use of a video of he and I on the piano. He on one end of the piano and I'm on the other. But, man, that guy, he can play. He called me a thousand fingers. But but anyway, most people don't know I play piano, but piano is really my instrument.
That's I read that. That is, like, your favorite. I mean, that's your thing, the piano.
Yeah, and on the 17th of April, man, I'm going to be in Long Beach for a radio station there. They're giving an unplugged thing at a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And they have Pine Top Perkins and two other guys from back in the Sonny Boy Williams and Howlin' Wolf days back there then. that's alive now. Well, you know, naturally would be alive.
No, sure.
Well, anyway, they have at least four or five of us that's going to be there and perform. Each one of us going to perform by ourselves, and then at the end, Pine Top and I are going to play the piano together.
Wow.
Who could get meaner, Sonny Boy or Howlin' Wolf?
Man, two things. Sonny Boy, when I started playing with them, every time we go to get paid, Sonny Boy would be done drinked up all the money. And so I said, hey, man, why are you doing that? He said, well, you should drink.
Oh, that's funny.
And then when I was living in West Memphis and playing with Howlin' Wolf, man, last time I seen Wolf alive, man, I had a mop swinging at him on 11th Street in West Memphis. I haven't seen him since. He just take your money. He wasn't mean. You know, because he don't know nothing to tell you to play. You just have to play what you know to play.
Right.
Yeah.
But he wasn't mean.
No.
What I meant by that is between the two of them, they didn't seem like they'd take crap off anybody.
I don't know, man. Wolf's a big dude, man. So was Sonny Boy. But man, I don't know. Well, see, like now, man, you got these big tall basketball players and things. Well, Wolf was tall, and so was Sonny Boy. But man, they was kind of humble like guys, man. They just do what they do.
Tell me, I'm reading the article and seeing what you're up to. We went to your webpage. What a fantastic webpage you got set up there. I mean, you're going to be mounting a huge comeback. You're going to be touring again. You're going to be putting out the book, music on the way. How do you feel now? I mean, so much crap behind you.
You know, it's really like today, man. I feel, I don't know, I just feel completely great, man. I'm talking about, I have no sickness. I'm really blessed.
You said in the article, and if you want to elaborate on this, you can. You said going to jail was the best rehab you could go
to. That's the truth, man. And I would like to tell your audience, too, man. You know, it's like you can think that, anybody, when you're doing it, you know, it starts off being fun. And later on, you'll be living for it. But, boy, that's the hardest thing in the world to stop. I know that anybody that's doing drugs that's listening to your program, they're doing it. But they don't really, they started off doing it for fun, and then it become, man, you start living for it. You start living for it. And, man, it's really hard. And rehabs, I'm not putting down rehabs. Don't get me wrong now. Rehabs is great. But when you go to rehab, you're in there with all the people that's in there. They all want to stop. And when time comes to get out, man, you really get scared. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And if you get out, man, and go back to the same place, I don't care where your home is, man, you're going to get sucked back in it, man. I swear to God you are. Because all of your friends, when you went into rehab, was dope. Pardon the expression. I am one, too. Dopiest. All your friends is dopiest. You know, that's all you know, really.
Yeah.
And so when you get out, where you going to go? You know, square people, you know, like you don't know what to do with yourself.
Right.
And if you go back around the same bunch, man, you have to stay away, man, for at least 9 months. Once you get 9 months, well, 6 months is good. But once you stay away 9 months, man, like, you can go around those people, and you can't get sucked back in unless you are really weak.
So you think staying away from it, you get out, stay away from it from 9 months, because in that first 9 months, 6 months, the temptation is still very strong.
But prior to the 9 months, man, you could get sucked back, because if you go around and they be doing around you daily, man, you can't help but get sucked back in it.
Any you know, and I this is probably a question that you didn't even realize yourself, or maybe you did. Any estimate as to how much money you wasted on your drug habit?
Oh God, man. Let's see, man. I don't know, man.
I mean, the money that you were rolling in throughout your career, I mean, hugely successful.
At one time, I was getting $52,000 every month from an oil investment, man. And I was blowing that.
Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, no person can do that much themselves.
Yeah,
But man, when you have what they call dope, as I said, dope is no, right, that we call it the bag. When you got the bag, other words, like I had a lady that would go down to South America and bring the stuff back in wood coat hangers. She would bring the hangers back and bust them on the table. I mean, straight, not stuff you get today, stuff that people are doing today they think is cocaine. Now, all I know about is cocaine. I don't know about nothing else.
Right.
But stuff they're getting today, compared to what I was doing, this stuff is 10% of the stuff that you get today on the streets.
Wow.
It's really no good for you, man.
But, no.
But, And so anyway, it's like the stuff. I had more friends then, man, than Carter had liver pills.
Yeah, they're all your friends. While you got the stuff that you're handing out to them.
That's right, giving out free, and that's how much I was giving away, man. Like right at $52,000 worth every six or eight weeks.
Ike Turner goes straight, and suddenly all those friends, they're hard to find.
When Tina and I broke up, and they thought I ran out of money, and et cetera, et cetera. I found myself in the studio by myself.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really lonely, man. You know, it's
we were saying your website, and both Haney and myself were saying you gotta send us a couple of those I Like Ike shirts.
Okay.
I said,
okay,
man,
you know, that's what I do want to. I want to get your address and thing. I don't have that.
All right, well, after we're done here, I'll put you on hold, and I'll give you the address. But, I mean, you really, that whole website, though, I mean, you got the Ike Turner fan club on there that they can join. It's got tour date information. It's got bio information on you. Great idea. That had to be your wife's idea.
No. She only sang, man. She only sang and cook and stuff like that. She only housewife. She don't. You got to see my show. You know, it's nothing egotistical in what I'm saying. But I think I have one of the best shows in the world. I have four fabulous girls with me. They dance and they sing and et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And like, you know, I used to stay in the background when it was Ike and Tina. I was always, pushing Tina and pushing the show.
Yeah. But you can always spot you, because whenever I watch some of that old stuff on like VH1 or they'll show some old stuff. You had at one point in time, like almost like a Beatle haircut.
Yeah.
You knew where Ike Turner was at all times on that stage. One, you could watch the old footage of that stuff, and you were directing people on stage as the whole act was going on. You had Tina dancing, you had the girls dancing, you had the band going, and you're looking out, and you can see in the corner where the camera is. I mean, you're telling them, you know, here's what you got to do, here's where you, and of course, you stood out because you had that Beatle haircut.
Hey, man, you know what? I didn't realize what I'd done, man, until after Tina and I broke up. I don't know if I've ever said this in an interview or not. If it's print, I don't think. Maybe and maybe not. When I was a kid, like 6 years old, 7 years old, there was a white lady that used to swing through the jungle like Tarzan. Her name was Nyoka. And, you know, just like Tarzan, she had a little tiger thing that covered her private parts. And she swing through the jungle and fight lions and stuff. Man, I was so in love with that woman. I was in Mississippi. They would have hung me if they didn't have talked to me. And I was so in love with Nyoka, man. And I'm telling you this, and then I'll give you the thing of the whole thing. But later on, as I grew older, I fell in love with the, what you call it, the parade people, the girl with the baton that be...
Majorette?
Huh?
The little majorette?
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, after Tina and I broke up, man, maybe 6-7 months after we broke up, I was looking at, because I never even looked at a video of us on stage. And I looked at this video, and I looked at the dresses, the way I used to cut her dresses up.
Yeah.
And thing. I made her roughness on stage. I made Tina, I put that wig on her head. I made, that was my Nyoka. And if you look at the mini dresses, nobody has ever worn mini dresses before I did. This guy from London, he had this show, what was his name? Jesus. He was a guy from London. Sam Cooke did his show. Jack Good, that was his name, Jack Good. Jack Good had a show called Shindig.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, nobody has ever wore a mini dress prior to me carrying the Ikeettes on his show. And if you look at the mini dresses is nothing but what majorettes wear.
They were pretty short for their day, though. Boy, they were up there. I mean, you'd see that Tina's legs, man.
And so the mini dresses is what I made Ikeettes and Tina and them do. And I made Tina my Nyoka when I started putting the wigs on them.
Now,
you had all this figured out when you were 6 years old.
Maybe so.
What about your haircut, though, that Beatle haircut? Was that a wig you were wearing, too?
I don't know which one you were looking at.
Oh, I know exactly which one. I see that it pops up on VH1 all the time. You actually had bangs, and you had it looked like you were wearing a wig.
I don't know, man. My hair is cut like that now. I got it. You know, I did have it natural about a year ago, and then I went and got it done, processed, and started wearing waves again. And just yesterday, I went and had it all cut off, man. Now I got bangs and stuff again.
Oh, man. Is that? But if you like it and you can still wear it, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I am. Incidentally, I'm going to the Hall of Fame when I leave Wednesday.
Oh yeah,
they're giving something there next week.
What are they going to give you?
Man, I don't know. They don't give you nothing, man. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why they even have a Hall of Fame. No, you know, I'm serious. You know, the Hall of Fame and these academy, you know,
yeah.
you know, this is the reason, man, my career has been hard for me all my life because I just say what I really feel. The Academy Awards and all this stuff, man, this is all junk. you know, the people that get the awards and things are not the people that, you know, I'm not saying that I'm supposed to get anything. I'm just saying.
Right.
They
don't deserve it.
Yeah, you know, part of the expression. They had the nerve to call here when they opened that place up. They sent me an invitation here, and they wanted me to pay. You know, they wanted me to pay something like $10,000 or $15,000 for a seat. I got to pay my way through. I got to pay my way there. And then, what is the Hall of Fame if you take the entertainers out of there?
It's nothing.
What do they got?
Nothing.
And then they're going to call and tell you they want you to come, and they're going to charge you $10,000, man, for a table for five or something.
Did you tell them to go to hell?
No, I didn't tell them nothing, man. I just told them don't call my house no more. And so what they did, some guy called here about a month ago, and so they sent us a $4,000 ticket. And they got us a hotel and a limo for us to come up there.
Well, that's a little better.
I said, hey, man, I'm coming. But, man, I hope you don't advertise that I'm going to perform because I'm not doing nothing. you know, because when they have these awards and stuff, man, all they do is they charge these people $2,000 a piece to come in the door. And when they get in the door, they got these nominees.
Yeah.
These nominees is not going to get nothing. They're just using their name to draw the people in there. Man, it's the biggest racket in the world. They need to shut them in funeral homes. They need to shut all of that down.
Ike Turner telling it like it is.
I'm sorry, I'd have got
that's all right. I love that. You know, when we have a guest on here that lets loose like you do, and it happens from time to time, and I appreciate that so much because you're saying what you feel.
Yeah. I don't have to be right, but that shows to God what I feel, man.
That's right. Ike, I want to thank you so much. I'm going to put you on hold so we can give you our address. Because a couple of I Like Ike shirts, man.
Okay.
Bring them down here.
All right, Stan and Haney, man. Thank you guys so much for this interview, man. I really appreciate it. You know, where are you in Washington, D.C.?
No, we're Fort Myers, Florida.
Oh, Fort Myers, Florida. Okay, well, okay.
Hey, have
well,
you ever been down
there? Man, I've been getting a lot of, I'd be glad when I play Florida again, man. I've had it pretty rough and so, but now gigs is beginning to come in. So if you got a gig back there, shoot it to me.
You got it. Hey, I'll tell you, we had a caller call in when we were saying that you were coming on the show who said that you used to come down to Fort Myers, Florida.
Man, I used to play Fort Myers. I played everywhere down there in Florida, Tallahassee, everywhere.
Yeah, he said, I mean, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I used to play down the Newport Hotel down in Miami, too.
Uh-huh.
I played everywhere. Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
We used to play everywhere. But, you know, since that bad rap I got, man, it's been difficult. But, like, now it's dead, and so people begin to find out that there's two sides to a story.
That's right, and you're a new man now, too. I mean, you don't
know. Yeah, but that's now, you know, I think I'm the, you know, in reality.
Yeah.
I'm being honest about this, about everything. I'm the same man. It's just like Tina said. They did what they want to do with that movie, and I made a mistake. I signed the thing with Walt Disney thinking I was signing for somebody to play me in the movie because she didn't want to do the movie with me. And I signed away my rights to sue them.
Yeah.
So that's how they got away with the movie. Tina don't like the movie, and she admits in Vanity Fair that she has never been a victim. So if she says that, man, it's either she knew me or they knew us.
You know it. Ike, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
You too.
Hold on.
All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.